The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 388 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Anna L. Join our text community by texting HELLO to 916-659-5112.
And now, on to Are We Long Still? We are still continuing our Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along by starting Part 10, entitled, Where's Perry Mason When You Need Him? And we will be beginning the first of five chapters, entitled, Dangerous Correspondence.
Another letter, this one from Lord John to Jaime, dated March 6th, 1775. Basically, Lord John is asking, what the heck? He sees Jamie's name on a few lists of suspected traitors and seditionists, and he's basically like, please be careful. As a matter of fact, this entire chapter is about letters or other written things, mostly ones that paint Jamie in a bad light. And one of the letters proposed a second Continental Congress to meet in Philadelphia. And we learn that Georgia was teeming with loyalists. We learn that Jamie has a pen name, Scotus Americanus. And for Claire, seeing all of this in black and white, Bree's history learned in school, it made her shaky. She has a deja vu moment of Jaime burning letters at Jared's house in Paris as he's burning letters here at
the
Ridge.
Were you tempted to go back and look on the historical documents for someone named Scottish Americanus? Scottish, whatever?
Not at all.
Okay.
I was only...
But you're always there for the trees. Okay, I get it.
The trees. So I haven't done trees since like book one or two.
Well, they haven't really talked about the trees yet.
Jamie's letter to Lord John. It's too late. We can't see each other anymore. I mean, write to each other. It's not safe. And just as Claire finds a prezi Lord John had included for Jeremiah, wee gem, it's a set of lead soldiers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Yes. Or ba, ba, ba. All kinds of chords you could use.
Yeah, there's not much to talk about when it's a letter. It's just a letter. I don't have any snarky asides about a letter. And these letters, at least. But thanks for the soldiers, dude. Moving right along to chapter 77, entitled The 18th of April. I liked this chapter a lot.
Me too. Roger and Bree are sleeping, and he wakes up. Actually, she's already awake, so they're both awake now. And she says that the day before was the 18th of April. It is here. It is the midnight ride of Paul Revere. And no, I did not mean to rhyme there. How spooky or eerie would it have been for her to have learned this in school and then be back in that time knowing what was going on right then or the night before? So she's basically reciting the Midnight Tale of Paul Revere. It's, I guess, an epic poem, I guess, type of epic-ish poem. She recites it, and throughout the thing, she'll pause and they chat. So she recites the rest and tells him of it. And I thought this was so, like, okay. She tells him of it, and then he mounts her, as you do. And that's how that ends. A little later, Jem is awake, and there's a pounding on the door.
If you were asked to recite
a poem,
the Paul Revere's Ride,
well, we never learned memory, it.
I mean, I know we read it in school, but we never had to learn it. You don't remember reading it?
No, I do remember. There's one. The only thing besides, like, you know, things that most, maybe not all, most kids learn, like Christmas music or something like that, Christmas songs. The only thing that I know I could remember from childhood, like, that's, it's still a song, but it, I could, if I had to write the poem out or the stanzas of the text, I could, were, I think I was in fourth grade, because you had to be in fourth grade to be in choir. You had to be at least in fourth grade. So I was in fourth grade at our elementary school. I think I recently looked up the text to make sure I wasn't, like, completely making things up. And I was right. Like, I have the words down, like, pat. The song was called One Brick at a Time. And we learned it in choir. It was one of the first songs we ever learned. And it wasn't, and it mentioned God. It didn't mention Jesus. It mentioned God or something. But that would obviously not fly in today's. But we were children of the 80s. So anyway, I remember that. If we had learned the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere to music, I probably would have remembered it, but not just the lines. But no, that's the only thing, again, besides things that most kids of our time would have been introduced to, like Christmas songs or children's rhymes and that kind of thing. The only thing that I know that was might be unique to me, instead of, you know, maybe other kids in that choir who still might remember it, is One Brick at a Time. That's it. So no, I don't have a lot of memory. I have memories. I have tons of memories, but I did not. I don't have any, I cannot recite anything that I may have learned. Like, I had a poem in first grade that I recited. I don't remember it. It involved flowers. That's all I know. Yeah. So a little later, Jem is awake and there's a pounding at the door. It's one of the Beardsleys. Lizzie is in labor.
Doesn't matter which one. No.
Not really.
No.
Bree gets dressed really quickly, runs to the cabin. And as she's on her way, she meets her mother on the way. And when they get there, Lizzie's already given birth. She's like, sorry, but it happened. So they get to work on the afterbirth stuff and clean up the baby and before giving it back to Lizzie. And then they let the boys in. Jamie and Roger arrive with wee Jem. And Roger makes an innocent remark about wanting another baby. And Bree is thinking she actually does want another, but it hadn't happened yet. So there's, like, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs of her internal thoughts, like, Does he think I blame him, or do I blame him? But no, now we know for sure he's Jem's dad. Is it me? Did Jem's birth or did the pregnancy or his birth, like, not break, damage something? Yeah. So she's kind of blaming herself and just having a lot of thoughts. So it's not that she doesn't want a kid. It's that it's a soft, I don't know if soft is the right word.
It's a sore
subject. Yes. But it hasn't happened yet. That's the point. So they talk about Mr. Weems, and yes, he does know the baby was on its way. And they talk about should we let him know that the baby's here and that Lizzie's okay? And Lizzie said, yes, he can be told, but if he wants to see the baby, he'll have to come to
She's
us.
She's got one hell of a backbone now. She went from meek little Lizzie to I want two men. And now no, you can't see the baby unless you come here and talk to me, man. Okay, and now on to chapter 78, The Universal Brotherhood of Man. This makes me think of how to succeed in business without really trying.
Oh,
there's a whole song called The Universal Brotherhood of Man.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. If you did, you'd have sung it already.
You're welcome. Bree is making paper. Roger tells her it's about to be the first meeting of Fraser's Ridge Lodge. So we learn that Jamie has started a lodge. I don't know if we know this yet, but because Bees just came out and the topic has been on my mind, and we're doing a reread of this, and I've recently on my own, you know, re-listened, quote unquote, listened, read to Moby and Echo and, you know, all the books, but especially the later ones. I cannot tell you where is the first time we hear of the fact that Jamie started a lodge at Ardsmuir. I did think, okay, I will say, this is going to air so much later than we record it. So by the time you hear this, you're going to say, actually, by the time you hear this, maybe the panel will be available. So we just got back last weekend from San Diego, where we had our, I think our fourth panel, Outlander fan panel at Comic-Con. And one of the trivia questions we asked that I came up with, and I only thought about it right then. I think we asked this. If not, it was something I asked somebody. But anyway, was the question was, what is the proper response to we met on the level? And the proper response is we parted on the square, which is the
like the secret passcode.
Kind of a secret way
it's like the handshake, only verbally.
Of finding and meeting or assuring, finding out for sure that someone was a Mason. And I thought about that, and I don't think I didn't tell you guys when we were brainstorming. But that made me think more later, like, when is the first time we actually, after the panel in the hallway when people were talking to us, someone asked about, they said, I didn't hear like the whole phrase. Could you tell me what that was again? And I told her both parts of it. And she goes, I think it was she said she was a show watcher and hadn't read the books yet. So she didn't, you know, wasn't aware of this. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, you know, come to think about it, because again, I have listened to, well, that's not true. I listened to all the books like coming up to bees, but something I had going on for probably a month or two was just Voyager on repeat. Voyager on repeat. I don't know why. It helps me go to sleep at night. It's soothing, whatever. So I remembered, because I listened to this so many times, especially these chunk of chapters, that when they go to France to get a boat from Jared, right, to be able to go find young Ian, there's no need for them to, like, he doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't need extra special stuff from Jared. Jared was, he's family. He was going to help him. But I guess because of some secret stuff, or to find out if it was okay to mention some secret stuff, when they're talking about the boats or Ian, or, you know, what they might need and what time of year it's safe to go and all of that, he says to Jared in his office, we met on the level. And he holds out his hand, and there's a pause, and Jared replies, we parted on the square. And Claire is like, defoe? She's like, what's going on here, guys?
What just happened?
So that's the first time, I'm not sure it's the first time Masons are mentioned, it may be, but it's the first time we get that line. So this woman who had seen the panel and was talking to us in the hallway, she said, where does that come from? And I said, well, it's definitely in the books, not in the show, not yet, who knows. But I said, in the books, if you ever do read them, it first shows up in Voyager. So it's way before, you know, book six. But anyway, so in case anyone was curious, that is the first time that we know, or that we hear the phrase. It doesn't mean that's the first time we know about the Masons or Jamie in Ardsmuir. I'm not going to say that because I did not listen to that for that information. But my memory of that line was pretty recent because, like I said, I was listening to Voyager like on repeat the last few months. Bree is making paper, as I said. Roger tells her it's about to be the first meeting of the Fraser's Ridge Lodge. And we learn that Jamie started a lodge in Ardsmuir as a way to unite the Catholics and Protestants, because it's still an issue. It's, put it this way, the issue hasn't gone away in books 8 or 9. That's not a spoiler. It's our country's history, right? So it was probably pretty smart of him to do that, because you're literally stuck in a cell with people for years. So at least to have some semblance, even if it's only going to last for an hour, right? You want to have some way of seeing the good in every person there. What is a way that we can all be equal? And it was Roger's idea to start a lodge there on the ridge. It was a way for men to find common ground, and he wants Bree to supply some snacks.
As you do. Now on to 79, entitled Alarms.
Now, the chapter starts out with an issue or a portion of the issue of L'Oignon Intelligence, which is the Onion. The new owner, Fergus, announces the new ownership and that it'll continue publication. And after that, there's the letter from Fergus and Marsali to Jamie, but it's Marsali actually writing it. Basically, or through Fergus. Fergus updates them on the matters at hand. The owner of the other printer in town was removed to Great Britain, so one of the Committee of Safety met with Fergus and wanted his assurance that he wasn't of the same sentiment as Mr. Robinson, the old owner.
That was quite a scene. I don't know, but that was quite a scene.
Well, they got into a conversation, or not even a conversation. He got information from Fergus, which was not a lot. It was like a huh or a yes or a whatever. But whatever he said to him was enough. It satisfied the dude. And the dude gave Fergus some money.
He's like, print my stuff.
And then a little bit later, another guy comes in, basically doing the opposite. We want to know that you are similar to the old owner. And he leaves him some money. So Fergus now has bank.
Word. Can we just go back? Because I feel like you really just
glossed over
the fact that they took this man from his bed.
Oh, yeah.
In his nightgown, delivered him to a ship, and sailed him back to England. That's extreme.
Yeah. It was kind of like what they did with, I don't think we're there yet, or maybe we're already there. I think we're already there. We've already had the discussion of Jamie trying to help someone from not getting tarred and feathered, right?
Yes.
So in that conversation, when he's talking with the Bells, a Mr. Bell, the father, right? The husband. So his wife and daughters are left there. And a Mr. Bell is left, was the same thing was done to him. He was taken in the middle of the night and thrown on a ship. So this is not new.
No, but it gets me every time.
It's a lot.
I'm like, the indignity. Like, we can't just have a polite disagreement. You're going to ship me.
Those Sons of Liberties were no stinking joke. I mean, I don't want to say remnants because they're not related, but we have very strong politics in today's day and age too. And some of those people, I wouldn't put it past them to say that. So it's definitely, yeah.
It's the same thing of them trying to tell foreigners to go home. But different. They actually put them on the boat.
They themselves were foreigners. Everybody here was a foreigner, except for the native and indigenous population. But they did not like people who were openly loyalist. So that's the difference. Now we learn Marsali has trouble sleeping because of this situation. And then there's another letter from someone on the Committee of Safety reporting recent attacks. And this Jamie's reading it, or Claire's reading over Jamie's shoulder, and she says, "That is the Lexington alarm. That's telling us now the war has actually absolutely started." Yep. And he asks Claire to make a copy of it so he can send it on.
Making copies of things back then, I would have been terrible at that. I have the worst handwriting.
You would have practiced.
I'd have been like, "Oh, damn it! Can't you copy it? You never can read my handwriting anyway." It would be like a secret code sheet. How bad my handwriting is. Anyway, that is chapter 79, and we're going to finish strong with a very long chapter 80 entitled The World Turned Upside Down. Don't do it.
Jamie decides to attend an upcoming Congress in Mecklenburg County, and Roger was going to go with him, and he's very excited about this. But in all the excitement, the Christies show up at their door soon after breakfast. They could tell something was wrong. Quote, Alan was flushed with agitation, Tom grim and gray as an old wolf, and Malva had clearly been crying. Her face went red and white by turns, unquote. Jamie asks, what's wrong? Malva finds herself with child. Oh. Jamie says, quote, there's a good bit of that going around, to be sure, unquote. Which I just made me laugh.
Well, what are you going to say?
Somebody
shows up at your house and you're like, well, daughter's pregnant. Cool. Yay.
Mm-hmm. And he says, how can I help? Tom says that she'll only name the man in his presence. Huh.
I hate her.
She appears to be about 6 months gone because she pulls her apron tighter to her waist, whatever, and Claire makes this observation. Malva stands up and says, oh, sir, how can you say that to me when you can the truth as well as I do?
Unquote. Gross.
And before anyone could react to that, she turned to her father and, lifting a hand, pointed directly at Jamie and says, it was him?
Nope.
And that was my mimicking Davina's intonation.
You know, everyone wants to get mad at me because of my strong feelings about Malva, and I don't care. I don't like her. And I think that this was an absolute choice, obviously. But like she, to not only just say it, she chose to do this to Claire, who's been taking care of her. She chose to do this to Jamie, who's been nice to her. Rah! There is just no reward for being a nice person.
Claire had been looking at Jamie's face when Malva had spoken. She saw his look of, quote, absolute incomprehension, unquote. He is like, what? Claire pulls back and wallops her good in the face. And then Claire was out of there. She runs out. Jamie helps slash hauls Malva up since she'd fallen, tripped over the stool and fallen and after Claire had slapped her. And Alan attacks Jamie. Tom tells his son to stop and keep his hands to himself. Alan tries again and Jamie punches him. Malva is all in the game, crying, saying how could you speak to me so? She mentions that it was when the sickness came and Claire and her father were ill. When they were caring for Claire, she mentions how Jamie had a scar on his rib. And once Jamie realizes that she does know of a specific scar, he hesitates. But Tom takes this as confirmation. Quote, I suppose you won't set aside your wife? Unquote. And that had me rolling. Go F yourself, Tom. How stupid. Tom is not a stupid man. The fact that he would even say that shows that he's blind or not stupid, but I don't know, ridiculous.
No. And then he's like, you can raise the baby yourself when it's born. I'm like, ew, it's not their baby.
Tom wants a contract drawn up for her and the baby's maintenance.
Nope.
And formal acknowledgement of the child's rights as one of his heirs.
Gross.
Jamie tells him to get the F out.
Exactly.
They end up leaving and he's like, I must find Claire. Megan P. writes, is this chick serious? After everything Claire has done for her, she's going to pull this crap? What a little... Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, Megan, this is me. What a little itchy bay. Roger knows whom she was canoodling with. Hopefully, he will shed some light on the situation. Good for Claire for slapping her. I would have done the same. Where in the world does one learn this type of manipulation on the ridge of all places? I'm like in shock at this girl's audacity and the skill at lying. How in the hell does she know all of these scars in such detail? I'm going to need someone with some sense to step in here. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Claire's still outside and it's starting to rain. She runs under a tree and her mind starts playing devil's advocate, saying, or maybe not devil's advocate, I don't think that's the right phrase, just seeing or talking from other sides, like trying to like maybe play both sides so that just in case the very, 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 very small likelihood, which is nil, small to nil likelihood that it's actually a thing. She's almost trying to explain it to herself. She says to herself, you could almost understand. Everyone thought you were dying, including you. But she knows he did not do it.
No, he didn't. And she should have. And she had that scene that she saw when she was sick of Malva trying to like comfort her. And she's like, oh, no, coming back. I'm not dying for this. So she should have known at that moment that Malva was a little bit f-ing deceitful.
But mostly it wasn't just the betrayal concerning Jamie, meaning Malva's betrayal involving Jamie, that even though Jamie was uninvolved, it was that she was her apprentice and the daughter of her heart.
Rude.
Jamie came to her near dark, and Claire tells him that she ran away because if she'd stayed, she might have killed Malva. She tells him that she believes him because if he were lying to her and her entire life, her being there on the ridge, Bree and Roger and Jemmy's being there on the ridge would be a lie. They shouldn't be here, she says, quote, but we are here, all of us, and we're here because I loved you more than the life that was mine, because I believed you loved me the same way. So he uses this opportunity to tell her, this is good or bad. I understand why he did it, but I'm like, really, Jamie? Okay. So he uses this opportunity to tell her that he lay with Mary McNabb.
I found this to be the weirdest argument ever.
Not an argument. Because he's just like, I got to put all my cards out there.
No, he did, but her aggressively responding to it. Who is it? You better tell me.
Oh,
who's
that?
I don't know who that is. And you're like, Lady, he had sex with...
No, you're misunderstanding it.
Geneva, and he had sex with Lyra. He had those, and she's let all of that go, but this one person and have a one time before any of that.
Then you're misreading it or mishearing it, because it's not that she's pissed off that it happened. It's that his entree is, I got to tell you about someone I slept with. And she's like, okay, who? And he's like, it was a time when you weren't there. And she's like, dude, just tell me who? And he's like, well, it was the night before. And she's like, GDJC on a toast, Jamie. Tell me the freaking name. It's not that she's upset that he slept with someone. It's that I went through and counted. It's like four times. He starts the conversation. He needed to, after he said, I had to tell you something. She's upset he didn't say the name.
Starts the conversation like you do.
Look.
He wants to give a bunch of backstory first. He's setting the scene.
He might very well do. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying she's not carrying on and growing angry because she's suddenly not able to forgive him for something. She's upset and frustrated because he's chosen right now. So, okay, this must be important. Yet it takes him 20 minutes to say the freaking name, and that's all she cares about.
Well, that's not how Davina read it.
It was how she read it.
I listened to it this morning, and that's not how it sounded.
She's growing. I remember it. She grows more and more agitated because she's like, who? Damn it, Jamie, who? She's not asking about anything else. She wants the name. And Jamie, Mr. Oblivious, apparently, is not catching on. She just wants to know who. Yeah, she wants to know the details, probably do, or she probably doesn't care. But she just wants to know who. It was Mary McNabb, and we all know about that. And with that, she had not only certainty of mind, but peace of heart. And as they are back at home, she tries to comfort him by saying, quote, no one will believe it regarding Malva, unquote. And he replies, they'll all believe it, Claire. I'm sorry. And that's the truth. Megan P. finishes us out with, I almost said finishes us off. I don't know.
No, she didn't.
She did not.
It's not that kind of podcast.
I didn't realize that he had never told her about Mary McNabb. You know, usually every two people that come together both come with the past. But I'm with Claire. It is never fun to think about your significant other with anyone else, no matter how far in the past. However, they have such a bond and a strength within their relationship. I hate the circumstances that caused it, but scenes where they can come together like they did in this chapter are what make the series so great and have made it great since the first interaction between them in book one. I'd sure like to get Mrs. Bug's take on Malva and her lies. I need more feedback on this lying heifer. Heifer, I haven't heard that in a long time as an insult. Can't wait to see what you two ladies have to say about this one. Good grief.
Wow.
Well, you don't have to wait long because Summer's been telling us for like the last 20 episodes.
It's not over yet.
It's not over yet.
And I can't wait for it to be over. So much so that I think I'm going to have a salad for lunch.
Oh, good Lord. What does that have to do with anything? Oh, Stummer.
Stummer.
Stummer. I don't know what I was about to say. Oh, my goodness.
No, I hate this side quest.
You hate this storyline.
Yeah, I hate this. It's a side quest. It's not important to the main vein of the story. It's a side quest. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't need to happen. And it amounts to really nothing except for hurting everyone's feelings. And, you know, what else happens? But the whole story would not have been worse if they'd left it out. You know what I mean? Anywho, I hate it. I don't like people lying, and I don't like people scheming, and I definitely don't like them lying about Jamie. He's honorable. And that was chapter 80. Join us next time when we will be discussing five more chapters of A Breath of Snow and Ashes. Chapter 81, Benefit of the Doubt. 82, Not the End of the World. 83, Declarations. 84, Among the Lettuces. And 85, The Stolen Bride.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Anna L. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and maybe even become a co-producer, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, come to our Facebook group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you're interested in any
doohickeys,
podcast branded merchandise...
Or doohickeys. I don't know. I don't know why that word came out.
I don't even think we have doohickeys. You can go to our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't joined our text community, why not? It is free and we love to text you every once in a while. Text hello, or just hello, to 916-659-5112.
Hey, you can say it in whatever accent you want.
That's true.
You'll still get it.
It'll still come. Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.